tides are ever rising, so we rise up.
Hello, happy spring, everybody. Welcome back to Women's Fire. I'm Michelle Thomas, and I guess I'm coming back from an unintentional hiatus. Spring is what it is. I mentioned in my last little mini episode, which I called a check-in, that we are in tax season, and I'm single parenting for a couple months mostly. So anyway, I've been busy. I've been in contact with potential guests, and they're busy too, and so I just haven't been stressing too much about it, and hopefully just letting things go. I tend to be uptight about these things, but sometimes you just gotta let those things go. So I'm really excited because I actually have some new guests that are gonna be coming up. What I'm actually bringing to you today, though, is an old guest. And actually, she was my very first guest. This is another re-release of a conversation that I had on the show Conversations with my friend Selena Dykstra. And she was willing to be my first guest and kind of a guinea pig as I was starting out on that project, and I think that was about a year and a half ago. And I brought Selena on to, you know, talk about herself, and she's kind of one of those unicorn people. I know that gets thrown around a lot, but I don't throw that word around a lot, but I think she is one of those really special people. If you know her, you know what I'm talking about. But at the time, I was working with her on some food stuff for me and for my family. About nutrition and what we get wrong and, you know, what to focus on, things like that. She talked about hum permaculture, which is her and her husband were doing at the time their farming project, and she was 8 months pregnant. And so it's been a year and a half, and a lot of stuff has, of course, changed for Selena, as now she's the mother of two. And I wanted to talk to, I am looking forward to talking to her about what that's been like and her new endeavors and what's all changed in the last year and a half. And that conversation will be next week. But this week is our original conversation, so you can get to know Selena and what we've already talked about. And I know you're just going to love it because she's such a great person. So enjoy this conversation with Selena Dykstra. Good morning. You're listening to Conversations on WDRT in Viroqua. My name is Michelle Thomas, and I am a new host for the show, and I'm really excited to be here and to welcome my first guest, Selena Dykstra, and get to know her a little bit. And she's a good friend of mine, so I'm really excited. And thank you for being willing to be my first guest.
You're welcome.
All right. So, Selena, can you just... I'm interested in your background. Where were you born? I know you're not from Wisconsin, so.
Yeah, I'm from Washington.
Washington
State. I'm from Western Washington, born and raised. And, sorry, it's Will Smith just, like, came into my heart and soul right there. I was going to keep going, then I was like, wait, just relax.
Right.
Okay, so I'm from Washington, and, yeah, I kind of lived... by the Cascade Mountains. And then 2 years ago, we moved to Viroqua.
Yeah. So what brought you to Viroqua? What was that process? How did you know you wanted to be here?
Yeah, what was that process? Well, when Jacob and I, my husband, got together, we were talking about where our life would end up, where we would end up. And his family is more together than my family is. And when we thought about raising kids together, we chose his family and their influence on our future children.
Yeah.
And so they live in Milwaukee. That's where Jacob was born and raised. And... So we just started from Washington. We looked on a map and we kept circling out from Milwaukee, like, where are we going to find home? And then we randomly heard about Viroqua. And we were living in Port Townsend, which a lot of Viroqua people know about.
Sure.
But it's this little tiny progressive town filled with good coffee and good people and all the crunchy moms, you know, and great music. And when someone told me about Viroqua, they also had a Waldorf school just like Port Townsend. And so we looked into Viroqua, and we really hoped that we would find community here.
Right.
Because that's a big deal for us.
Right.
And it would support the farming lifestyle that we wanted to have.
Right. Yeah, great. And, I mean, even though Jacob's from Wisconsin, Milwaukee's not near here, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, you would need...
We thought 3.5 hours was a very good distance to, you know, parents and also from them.
Yeah,
you know
what for I mean? Sure.
But it's been really great.
Yeah.
So I would do lots of holidays. I mean, COVID obviously throws everything up in the air.
Right. But. Yeah, because you guys have been here for 2 years, and now a year and a half of that has been
COVID.
Under COVID.
Yes.
But even in those 6 months, it sounds like you found the community you were looking for.
I was so grateful we didn't wait till spring to move.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Right. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
I said in a post recently about how when we moved here, because it's actually was our farm anniversary on August 20th.
Okay.
And when we moved here, I walked up to this woman at the farmer's market, and like, it was my job to find friends for Jacob and I because we didn't know a single person.
Right.
And so I took my 6-month-old baby to the farmer's market, and we were walking around, and I saw a mom with a baby, and I walked up to her and I said, "Hi, I see you have a baby. I have a baby too." And I just lifted up my son. And nice. She was like, "Hi, yeah," and super friendly.
Yeah.
And then she invited me to a fish fry, and then I was invited to this like paella party, baby shower, and just met all of the community I have now.
Right.
And I was just totally swooped up and loved, and
that's amazing.
It was magical.
Yeah. But you also did that. So tell me a little bit about your extroversion, because I know you're like a self-identified extrovert, and
yeah,
just to walk up to a stranger at a farmer's market, where do you think you get that from?
Oh God. That's a really deep question.
Oh.
Where do I get my extrovertedness from? It is part of my compulsive honesty, because I don't think I was... Maybe I've always been an extrovert, but I haven't been a very good one. Like, I didn't really know how to be one.
Right.
And, I actually have a moment in my life where I change it. I have like a very specific moment.
Okay.
Would
where you
like
decided that was going
to
be.
Well, it just kind of happened.
Okay, sure. If you want to tell.
It relates to wilderness school too.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I was out of high school, and this is in Western Washington. I was having a very hard time in life. Yeah, I would just look around me and what my life had, and it was all really painful, and I needed to not be around that anymore. So I had this really old spray-painted Ford Mustang. It was really boxy and ugly, and it was amazing.
Awesome.
And it mostly worked. Yeah. Kind of, if I cross all my fingers.
And toes, yeah.
It worked. But I was living with my mom at the time. And I like packed up this car full of all the things. And then I put my bike that I had just learned to ride. I didn't learn how to ride a bike till I was like 18.
Wow.
So I put my bike on the back of my car and I said, "I am just going to go until my car breaks down. And then when my car breaks down, I'm just going to ride my bike."
Wow.
And it's winter. But it's winter in Washington is very different.
Yeah.
So anyways, I leave. I just know that I need to leave everything that I've known behind.
Yeah.
I just had to. And so I did. And then my car, I drove about, I don't know, maybe 50 miles or so up to the mountains. And I stopped at a friend's house who lived up there, stayed overnight. And when I woke up in the morning, there was a foot and a half of snow all over everything, including my car. And my car was stuck for a long time. And then there was more snow. And then all the power ceased.
Right.
The power was out in the whole town. And, I mean, it was a tiny town of Skykomish. And it was a very rough week.
Yeah.
Of me being stuck at my friend's house. Our food is dwindling. Just so much snow.
Right.
Wet.
Very stuck.
Cold. And yes. It was like me bursting from this life and then all of a sudden just compacted with snow.
It wasn't really going the way you
envisioned
when you drove off in your car.
Yeah. So I was feeling extra down.
Yeah.
And we ended up borrowing a truck of the hotel in Skykomish because that's how everyone is in small towns. It was even smaller than this town.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple hundred people. We borrowed their truck in exchange to do their laundry.
Nice.
So we brought a bunch of hotel sheets and et cetera. And we finally went down the mountain to civilization where there wasn't snow and there was power.
Right.
So we ended up at a laundromat. And I'm sitting in this laundromat, and I just, like, when I think about it, I still feel the confusion.
Okay.
And the pain lot. Like, just, I'm like, what the heck is, what am I doing?
Right.
You know, which is a lot of, like, 18-year-olds
sure.
feel that in their life. Maybe I was 19. I don't know, 18 or 19. And I remember sitting there and I was like, well, I guess it was a lot of speechlessness and me just awkwardly trying to just talk out my life plan
right.
with my friend's mom. And I was like, well, I guess I could go to school for social work. I like people, you know, it's just really, I had no idea who I was.
Yeah.
And then something so magical happened that changed the course of my life forever.
Yeah.
The woman who was working at the laundromat overheard me, and she started telling me about this college that she's going to right in the town that I was born in, that
okay.
I was just trying to leave.
Right.
I was like, and she was like, so it's a wilderness college, which I had never heard about. And
right.
she was like, yeah, today we learned bird calls. And she like looks up somewhere in the room and just, you could tell she's like remembering her day and just this warm wash of happiness comes over her body and just
right.
her remembering her day at school. And she's telling me about survival skills and plant medicine and permaculture, and I'm like, I have no idea what this stuff is.
Right.
I am not from that people.
Yeah.
My family is not like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know what she's talking about, but the feeling that she has, I want.
That's what you want.
That's what I want. And she said, how about you come to a class? Come to a class. We're going to be making this balm from the black cottonwood tree. And I was like, okay, you know, and she gives me her number. And I know that I am not going to call her. I know how bad I want to, and then I'm definitely 100% not gonna call her. But I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, just like, sure, I'm listening. But also I'm completely terrified of life.
Right.
And, it's weird to be scared of the things that you want.
Right.
Yeah. But she also, this to describe this woman, she looked so different than any other person.
Right.
That I was around.
She's like tapping into something that you wanted, but
had no idea. I mean, she had like short hair, like that was really messy, and she had really long dreadlocks, just like two of them.
Sure.
Like that was like some of them, maybe they were like a foot and a half long, just draped over her shoulder. She smelt of BO, which was remarkable to me, and also very nice and calming in a way. Just she was so natural. She didn't have makeup on, and she was listening to some really weird eclectic music. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was like, I don't know what this is, but it's okay. I think I'll take it.
And to some extent, I'm sure it was like the opposite. It was something other, and that's what you were looking for.
Yes,
other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was here. It was in the town.
Amazing.
I had no idea. And she came from Michigan. People had come all over the U.S. and Canada to go to this school.
That was so accessible to you, yeah.
Yes. Right. And so I was like, all right. So I got in the car and I held her ripped, piece of paper with her number on it in my hand, and I knew I was not going to call her, and I was feeling so, so sad.
Yeah.
And then I was like climbing into this big truck, and I looked at my friend's mom and I said, hold on. It was like this very like heroic moment. Yeah. I just yelled, hold on. Something just came over me, and I ran back into the laundry room and I pointed my finger right at her and I yelled, I'm going to call you in 1 week. And the way she looked at me was so weird. Okay, I have full body goosebumps right now because this is such a huge moment,
like a visceral
in
moment.
My life.
Yeah.
And she just is like, okay. You know, just like, what are you doing? I thought you were going to call me anyways.
Yeah.
But so I just like.
For you, that was your commitment.
That was the moment, I think, that I started practicing my extrovertedness.
That's amazing. And, I mean, at least seems like it has turned your life, or it's brought you the things that you wanted, or the changes that you were looking for.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So I did. So exactly 1 week later, my car was, it took, I think, 5 or 6 days to get my car back to my mom's house.
Yeah.
I think it needed a complete new battery or something because the snow and the cold completely drained it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I called her. Her name is Jessica. And I was so nervous. I called her. And she answered, which was remarkable to me. And I could hear people laughing in the background. And she was so calm. And I was just like, how is she so calm? Life all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And then I talked to her. And so 1 week after that, so 2 weeks from meeting her, I went to this school, and it was absolutely everything I just didn't know I needed. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That sentence makes sense?
Yeah. You know when you know.
It was amazing. And what was really sweet is, so for Cottonwood Buds, you let them sit in olive oil for a year to, because the resin is really intense and sticky, and it needs a long time to just hang out in the menstruum or the oil.
Yeah.
And so that year's class picked all these buds and soaked them in oil for the next year's class, and that was my class. I ended up going the next year. And it completely changed my life. That's where I learned about permaculture.
Yeah.
And that's where I stopped being a vegan, and that's when really started, oh my gosh, just thinking about it, just so much. I had people that saw me for the first time, and it was very uncomfortable, but also just so stimulating from my soul.
It sounds like you also were maybe seeing yourself for the first time. Like you found an identity or you could see yourself in those people, even though you had no idea what that was before that.
Yeah.
So that's really incredible. Is that where you met Jacob?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
But you met him in Washington?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how many years later? That was several years later that I met Jacob. Because I went to, maybe it was three years later that I met Jacob. So I learned about permaculture, and then I got really into farming, learned that I loved that, and I loved herbal medicine, and I loved the body. I loved learning about the body. It was just like my brain just understood that. And also this other level of like connection to the earth is like another level of connection to our bodies, vice versa. I spent almost 2 years there. The second year got interrupted by a big tragedy. That's when I lost my sister. And so that was another point in my life where I had to lose myself, find myself.
Right.
So that was part two of Selena figuring stuff
growing
out.
Growing Selena.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I went to Hawaii, just bought a one-way ticket to Kauai and farmed lettuce for half a year. And then it was the one-year anniversary of my sister's death. And so I wanted to go back and be there for her. She left behind a four-year-old. So I wanted to be back for that, for him and for myself. And I did that, and I land, and what I said to myself is the only way I can go back to Washington is if I have a good, nourishing place to land.
Right.
And then a friend from Wilderness School told me about this farm called the Dirt Rich School, and you learn lots of like homesteading skills, etc. It's kind of like a woofer farm. Jacob was the person that interviewed me.
That's great.
And that's how I ended up there.
Thanks, Lena. You're listening to Conversations on WDRT. My name is Michelle Thomas, and I'm talking with Selena Dykstra. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations on WDRT. My name is Michelle Thomas, and I'm talking with Selena Dykstra this morning. And Selena and her husband run a permaculture little farm here called Hum Permaculture. And she was just telling us about how she came to permaculture and then also ended up meeting her husband through a similar experience out in Washington. And so you had mentioned earlier that you were looking to move closer to family. I know you had your son out in Washington, and I know from experience that when you're looking to form your family, right, you're looking for where do you want your roots to be, who do you want to be around. And so you made the move to Viroqua. And then can you just talk about your experience setting up your farm, getting your land, kind of how you've established yourself in the last couple of years here?
Yeah. I can't even believe it's been 2 years. Time just, it just goes quicker and quicker and quicker and quicker.
Right.
I think kids kind of accelerate it or something.
Totally.
Everybody's nodding their head in this studio. They're like, I feel you.
Did you move to your land right away? Like, did you have it picked out, or did you have to?
It was kind of, it's hard to find land. And we were trying to do, our thing was, you know, at least 40 acres.
Okay.
That's what we wanted, at least 40 acres. Because we wanted to, we didn't think veggies, like growing market veggies, was what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
We just basically knew we wanted to farm, and we knew we wanted to get here and start.
Right.
So we... I was actually incredibly pregnant. I think I was about 8 months pregnant, so not really able to fly to go view land. And he came, Jacob flew here in like April, I think, or maybe that's when, I don't know. He flew here a couple times to mm-hmm. look at land. And I didn't go both times. And so the first time we didn't find anything that we thought would work for us. And then a second time, I think I had just had my son, and he was very, very young, so I didn't fly with him. And Jacob was working with Karen Innes, a really great realtor here, who knows a lot about permaculture and just farming. And so she was helping us find land. And so we were viewing all these properties that were mostly raw mm-hmm. land. And Jacob and I had already built two houses together. Wow. The funny thing is...
And you're still together.
I know. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I know. Right? I love that you understand that. Yeah, we built two. I mean, so when we first got together, we were in 100 square foot. We lived in 100 square foot space. It was like, it's called a yom.
Okay.
It's like a tent and a dome.
Sure.
Mixed together. Is that, or what? Or yurt? Yurt and a dome. Yom.
There you go.
Folks.
Yom. Okay. Check.
And so it was 100 square foot, and we didn't have water or lights, obviously, or electricity. And then we upgraded to Jacob built this round, tiny wooden house where he like milled all the lumber with his friend. And so that was our 200 square foot house. We didn't have any running water still. And we had one solar light that worked sometimes, but not all.
In Washington, I can imagine.
In Washington. And we finally had a fireplace, because we definitely went through a winter without any heat. Only in Washington, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then from there, we moved to another property and built a 400 square foot house. So we just kept doubling
right.
our square footage.
And your plan was to find land and build
land
again.
And yeah. do it again.
Yeah.
But just like you kind of alluded to earlier with you're still together, I had a baby now.
Yeah.
And I was like feeling down, but also not. I was like, when can I stop being so tough?
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
Like, I know it's cool to be tough and all, but like, can I stop now?
Yes. I've proved it. I've done it.
No.
I've beat in buckets for a
right?
while.
Like, oh my gosh. I want it to be done. So yeah, but we thought that was the only way, because we didn't have any money, right? That's
right.
very common mm-hmm. to not have much money. But yeah, so what happened, how we found the property that we have, which is just 4 miles from the co-op.
Amazing.
And it's 6-point-something acres.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great with a little house that has all the things.
Yeah.
But how we found that was because we weren't looking for that.
Right.
But Jacob came here in April, and there was like this major snowstorm, and stuff got delayed, and Karen was like, well, I mean, just to buy us some time, or like just to fill some time, I mean, mm-hmm. let's just go look at this little house here. And they're like, okay, whatever. And Jacob barely even remembered it,
mm.
you know, because he was so focused on
right.
not 6 acres.
Yeah.
I mean, minimum was 40, okay, maybe 20, okay, yeah. maybe 15.
Right.
And then it's like 6 and a little house, and it's a lot of it is wooded and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're like, how are we gonna farm there?
Yeah.
So But that's where we live, obviously.
Right. Yeah, so it worked out.
It worked out. And I didn't see the property before we bought it. I was just like, oh, cool, it has a house?
Right.
Wow, you can have a bedroom. Right. Oh, my God, the inside has doors.
Yes. There might be a flush toilet and some light switches.
There's two. There's two flush toilets.
That's amazing.
It was really amazing to move here and feel help in the community right away, but also just like, wow, look at this kitchen.
Yeah.
Now I felt so much more capable.
Right. And like you said, with a baby, I mean, that's hard enough.
Yeah.
It's hard. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. So I know this year's the first year, I believe, you've been at the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. So what was establishing your garden? I mean, it's gorgeous, and your produce is really, really beautiful.
Thank you. I mean,
aesthetically, and I mean, it tastes delicious, but it's like beautiful food.
Thank you.
So you obviously, I mean, if I remember, because I think you've shared pictures online, there was not an established garden.
No, it was just like this huge lawn.
Lawn, right.
I think it's about a half acre of lawn space. So we moved there and we're like, hey, you know, permaculture, you can scale down to nothing.
Little backyard.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or you can scale up to hundreds and hundreds of acres.
Right.
So we felt more comfortable that we could figure it out.
Right.
But we didn't really know. All we wanted to know is that we were farming. That
right.
We were going to figure out how to farm.
Mm-hmm.
So we developed our, so the first year we just had a like family garden.
Right.
And we do no dig. So
okay.
We got a lot of cardboard. A lot of compost and one wheelbarrow and two shovels, and we built I think we built 9 50-foot beds.
Wow.
And this year we're growing on 20 50-foot beds, and that's really small when it comes to farming. Like mm-hmm. We don't have a huge stand at the market, but we
right.
Yeah, we're just figuring it out.
Yeah.
And that's what this whole year has been. Because Jacob and I realize that we want to farm, and that is our goal.
Right.
And we want to make money from the land so we're home. And it's just, I mean, there's kind of a lot of secrets, too, about what we're doing that I can't share just yet.
Yeah. That's okay. You have plans.
There's lots of things in the works, folks.
Nice.
But as of now, we're really just, this year, we were just feeling stuff out.
Right.
And we went to the farmer's market for the first time. I think Jacob and I both cried. Because it felt like one of the most vulnerable things ever.
Yeah.
Like when you want something so bad. And Jacob and I have had a lot of hard moments in our relationship and in our lives together. But throughout all of this, we've wanted the exact same thing, like with our lives in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a intense moment to show up at the market with some radishes.
Yeah.
And some, I don't even know what else we had, some kale and something else. And it was like, didn't seem like a big deal, but it was huge.
Yeah.
Huge for us.
Yeah.
And everyone was really sweet. And we met a lot of the other farmers there. And I learned something about Viroqua and its farming community, and that it's really supportive.
Yeah.
Like, in Washington, there was so much, what's the word?
Like competition?
Competition, but also, like, when you think you're better than someone.
Oh, sure, like arrogance or something.
There's some other word that's floating in my mind, but I can't grab it. But I'm going to let it go. There was a lot of that in Washington. And... It was it was weird. Like these farmers weren't connecting, and they would talk bad about each other. Hmm. And I was really scared that it would be like that everywhere.
Right.
But it's not here.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the love that I feel for all these amazing farms. There's some amazing, incredible mm-hmm. farms here.
Yeah, we're so lucky.
Just rocking it. Oh, yeah. I'm so inspired and amazed by everyone. And then we're these, like, new people and just figuring it out. Like, we're not real farmers yet, you know? And they're just still so loving and supportive of our struggling beginning.
Yeah.
So
I'd say you're hitting it out of the park. It's really sweet. And so part of that for me as a consumer is your social media presence, because you've done a really amazing job of being, I don't know, I think you're vulnerable, you're honest, you're silly and funny. And
it all started with the kale video.
Yes, it was so
sweet. I had
no
idea.
I know. I mean, it's like, Lynn, that's just it. It's like so natural. It's, but you became like a Instagram celebrity.
So
in the
funny.
Area. People just loved it.
So beforehand, I asked Jacob, I said, Jacob, I hate Instagram so much. If we have a farm Instagram, I really need you to just have it on your phone. Like, I can't. Because I've had an Instagram before, and I just didn't feel, I just had a weird relationship to it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was always struggling to navigate Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of how you can, like, filter your life, so mm-hmm. it just looks amazing all the time.
The curation, I feel
yeah,
like.
Yeah, the curation.
You're
That's
curating
an
image or whatever.
Yeah. And it makes you just feel bad about your own life. So that's right. what I was feeling a lot of the time when I was consuming Instagram pictures and people's right. profiles. And it's like I would click on people's profiles. Like, they have a color scheme to their life.
Yeah.
Their life has a color
it
scheme.
It all matches.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was like, how much time do these people spend on their phones?
Right. Well, it's my understanding that it's part of the business model now. I mean, if you want to have almost anything, you know, would want to have like an Instagram presence. Do you feel pressure to do that?
Well, I think I enjoy it now.
Well, and you seem to only, I would say, like, post when you seem inspired. You know what I yeah. mean? Like, you're not just like, oh, I got to get something out.
Yeah. Well, I try. I do think about it, and I try to plan content. Mm-hmm. And there's someone, I wish I could do a name drop, but I can't.
Yeah.
There's someone who talks about, she's from the Driftless area.
Okay.
She talks about different social media stuff and how to create like a healthy relationship with it. And
oh, great.
So why I like Instagram is because what has happened with it, with this business, is mm-hmm. that people are coming up to me and saying, hi, you do the permaculture videos. And I'm like, yes. And then I get to just meet all these lovely people.
Yeah.
Like, they just introduce themselves, and it's so sweet. And I want to know if Instagram can be this way that actually we connect to each other on there and also in real life.
Right.
You know, and I really want to be like a positive thing in people's life.
Right.
Like, truly.
Yeah.
I do not want to do an Instagram if people are feeling like, you know, like how I felt when I saw these people's life,
right.
like, oh, wow, that's just like they have everything together.
Yeah, to me what is refreshing about your feed is and your stories is it seems all of it. You know, it's not just the curated, beautiful things, but it's the hard things or the silly things or the tired things or the mom things, you know,
yeah.
that people can relate to, and that it seems like a pretty well-rounded picture of what you're doing instead of this very specific, just focusing on on the good things or, you know, what's going well.
I'm so glad that it seems like that to you.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I really do think about it.
Yeah.
And like, seriously, this kale video, I had no idea. The funny thing is, it was really brilliant. If someone doesn't know what the kale video is, go to the Instagram. It's at hum.permaculture.
Yep.
And it's down there.
Yep.
And you'll see a picture of me with some words that says, word on the street is y'all don't like scarlet kale. And it came after us doing, like, I don't know, a market or two. And we sold a lot of things, but we sold zero scarlet kale. And it was like, oh, okay, so people don't know how to use scarlet kale. It's like really awesome food. And I was like, so I'll just like show people how to use it. And I was going to be the curated perfect person. That's because that's what I learned from Instagram. That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You look really cute. Look cute, okay? That's the first rule.
Right. You have
brush
to be
that hair.
Yeah.
Yes.
Be
attractive. Make sure your house has a nice color scheme first.
It must be clean.
It must be so clean.
And organized.
Yes. Anyways, so that was my... It lasted, I think, until I made the quinoa. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then...
Well, I was going to say the thing that I loved about the kale video is that I thought you did. You said, hey, word on the street is you guys don't want the scarlet kale. And maybe it's because you don't know what to do with it. And I'm going to show you all these things to do with it. And that's exactly... That's me. I don't know what to do with scarlet kale. I can like saute it. I don't know.
Right.
So you just had this like brilliant video of all these ways. And if I remember correctly, I think scarlet kale did better following your video. Yeah. So that actually leads me into the next thing we're going to talk about, which is nutrition. But we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Conversations on WDRT. My name's Michelle. I'm talking to Selena Dykstra. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You are listening to Conversations on WDRT. My name is Michelle Thomas, and my guest here is Selena Dykstra. And we were just getting into or talking about your Instagram video that went viral.
No, it did not.
It went viral, which is great. So, and I was saying that one of the things I loved about it is that it was, you had all these tips and ideas, and I don't mind cooking. I just, kale is not really in my repertoire of foods that I eat. So from that and just knowing you and, you know, you talk about nutrition and stuff sometimes, I had contacted you about doing some nutrition counseling and how can I bring scarlet kale into my life and some of the other stuff, because I think you're really tapping into something there that we don't just need the food. We need to know how to use it in our lives and not get like bored with it or whatever. So you and I have been working together on that, and I'm just interested in how you got interested in nutrition and why that's important to you, because I know that's an important part of what you're trying to do even through your farming and stuff like that.
Yes, totally. So I went to Nutritional Therapy Association. So I'm a nutritional therapist. This was in Washington before I moved. So my history with food is a long one. And it's complicated.
Yeah.
Food essentially brought me back to life.
Mm-hmm.
It healed my body. I was incredibly sick when I was 12. I was diagnosed with juvenile onset rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm.
I couldn't walk.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was in so much pain. I was taking like 9 pills a day, and it was a very lonely, painful time of my life. And I don't really understand what happened. Like I've mentioned before, my family is, how would you describe it? Not very typical.
Right.
Dysfunctional, that's the word I'm looking for.
Right.
I'm not totally sure if I like got bit by an insect of some kind and it started like this autoimmune cascade, but essentially I had autoimmune disease and then I developed PTSD and then from something else not unrelated, mm-hmm. and then I developed this like massive yeast candida. It wasn't actually candida, but people know what that is. Just massive fungal thing throughout my entire body. I was incredibly sick.
And this is like in your childhood. I mean,
this is more my adulthood. I think the arthritis kind of just sets it off, and then my joints are damaged to a certain. I don't have arthritis now. I don't have, but my joints are, certain joints are definitely damaged from that experience when I was young. So I've spent a lot of my life feeling really terrible in my body. Feels like my body was against me a lot of the time. And I had no idea that food could heal me so incredibly.
Yeah.
And so the first book, like nutrition book I read was when, I don't know how old I was, maybe 20 something.
Yeah.
22 or something. I don't know. And it was The Walls Protocol by Dr. Terry Walls.
Okay.
And that's where it's an incredible book. It's not for everyone. I wouldn't, if you're dealing with stuff, I wouldn't just go jump and read it. Just go look for a nutritional therapist.
All right.
So I read that book and I learned about functional medicine. And then I started taking on some of those principles. And I just, functional medicine was like, wow. You know, this whole body approach to healing that was just so different. And the basis of that was food.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, you have these degenerative diseases, you have cancer, you have blah, 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 blah. Food, gut health, food, gut health, food, mm-hmm. gut health. That is the beginning of all of it, mm-hmm. which is incredible and crazy to me. You know, I mean, it was.
Yeah.
But now I understand that food creates our body.
Mm-hmm.
I was really sick and I started experimenting with changing my diet and it brought me back to life.
Yeah.
And just, so it was this very much, I wanted to devote my life to helping people figure out what saved me.
Right.
But then I also had all these eating disorders my whole life, which are very common and not talked about.
Yep.
Because having eating disorders sucks. Mm-hmm. It sucks so much because it's so embarrassing.
Well, it's also not just one thing.
You know, like
you hear the word anorexia or you hear the word bulimia, and then that means a specific thing. But there's such a variety and a spectrum of what disordered eating
is. I like to say that I've had the rainbow of them. All the colors on the rainbow. I've done it.
Yeah.
You know, I've even been to Overeaters Anonymous, OA. It's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was there. Hi, I'm Selena.
Yeah.
I'm a compulsive overeater.
Yeah.
And
is that because you were or you just thought you were?
No, I was.
Okay.
I've had, no, this is, it's amazing to be, honestly, every time I think about it, I can't believe I am where I am now with food.
Sure.
With looking at my history of food. I've even had orthorexia, which is like you could only put the purest, organic, wonderful foods into your body. Like it was... My diet was hyper-controlled. I think that was one of the last ones I've had before I became an intuitive eater, which we can talk about. But, orthorexia is just this, like you're so scared of food. And that one came after I healed a lot of my autoimmune stuff
mm-hmm.
and I healed my body because I was so terrified that food was going to be the thing that made me sick again.
Well, it could heal you or it could make you sick, right?
Yeah. And so that's what I thought.
Yep.
Yeah. And then somehow I learned, my body just decided it was going to intuitively eat. Mm-hmm. And I kind of heard of intuitive eating, but more so I witnessed it for the first time before I ever knew what it was. And it was like, what is that person doing?
Mm.
It was, do you want me to tell you the story? Okay,
sure.
Here's my moment.
Mm-hmm.
So with food, I'll just say where I was at in this time with food. It was a restrict and binge kind of mentality when it came to like, these foods are bad. Like, so sugar was like the demon.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I ate sugar, it would like, I couldn't stop eating.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel so much because it was such an intense, long-lasting part of my life, this relationship with food.
Sure.
So I was in Hawaii, actually, and there was this gluten-free chocolate cake. And it was, I still think it's the best cake I've ever had in my life. It was incredible cake. And it was gluten-free. So there, mm-hmm. boom, it passed one of my rules. So I could try it.
Sure.
Right? It passed a rule I had.
Right.
Passed a rule. I tried it. It was incredible. And so I would hitchhike to go get this cake every once in a while, like many, many miles to like multiple towns away in Kauai to go get this slice. It was incredible cake.
Yeah.
Let's just be real, okay?
Yeah. a cake worth hitchhiking for.
Yes. So I remember sitting there and there was some friends, a friend and an acquaintance, and we had all just gone in the store and then we came out and my other friend who also thought sugar was a demon,
mm-hmm.
And was very, very affected by sugar. I mean, that's a real, I'm not also, I want to say to anybody listening, I'm not making fun of where you are at with food or saying that I am so evolved that, you know, I just pity everyone who has these struggles.
Right.
That's not where I'm coming from. Like, I get it, and I hold that in me.
Right.
And, so, with that said, this person, my friend, Asa, he also didn't eat sugar. But there was this cake.
Right.
Said, Asa, this cake is gluten-free. Come on. It's
right.
Gluten-free. And so we were, like, sitting on this park bench. We were like, blah, blah, blah. Just like, oh, the chocolate cake paradise in paradise. It was amazing, right? And I'm not saying anything was bad about that moment. But I was like, oh, this is so good. And he's like, he's getting, like, chocolate cake on his little blonde mustache. It's just, I remember that moment so much, so well. There's the little tiny chocolate chips on the ice. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I looked at this woman who was an acquaintance of mine and a good friend of Asa's. And she was sitting there and she was eating, split pea soup.
Uh-huh.
And we were making, like, we were just going nuts about this chocolate cake.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you want some? You gotta have some.
Yeah.
Have some
this
of this amazing thing. She'd cry with us, you know, rejoice. And she's like, no, this is exactly what my body wanted. And she like finished her split pea soup. And I remember she like licked her spoon and set her spoon down in her bowl. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
What? The fact that she talked about what her body wanted.
Right.
And was, like, totally fine with us indulging, enjoying this cake. But she didn't have this restrictive thing with sugar. Or she didn't have, she was an intuitive eater. I didn't know that. And it's not that she was telling herself that she couldn't have the cake. That's not what it was.
Right.
It was that she was checking in with her body.
Mm-hmm.
And that she was like, no, this split pea soup was exactly... exactly, it just totally hit the spot.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but I want it.
Yeah.
You know, again, like the, yeah. Again, I mean, a lot of moments are.
That's amazing, though. You're so observant. I mean, I think it's hard for people to be paying enough attention to see what they want in other people and to even just notice, you know, that that's something I want. And then instead of being like resentful about it
or shameful for yourself,
For yourself. Yep. That you're embracing it and tell me more. Mm-hmm. I want that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And then I mean, years of continued eating disordered and lots of rules, lots of binging, lots of restricting. I mean, I would go and see a nutritional therapist and they would say, oh, your diet is absolutely perfect. And they would put my food journal away and they would look at me and say, let's talk about stress, you know? And it wasn't how I discovered intuitive eating for myself, and it was the first time I listened to my body. Mm-hmm. I was pregnant with my son. And it was the first time my body spoke louder than my rules, my shame, my information, all the things. My body was like, oh, you're gluten-free. Oh, you this. Mm-hmm. I want sourdough bread, Kerrygold butter, and raw milk right now. That's what my body wanted.
Yep.
And it was this like, it was finally me feeling for the first time that my body had something to say, essentially.
And you were going to listen.
Yeah.
Or it was just so loud.
I couldn't help it.
Pregnancy hormones will do that.
And so it was this, so I mean, I had him, so this was 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I eventually stopped going to OA because in OA, I mean, it helps a lot of people, but I realized it wasn't for me because the end goal of OA is an eating plan, and that just felt like another eating disorder to me.
Sure.
And so with intuitive eating, it's just, I think it could change the world. Yeah. I think it's one of the most powerful things.
So what are some, I mean, like three things that you would want people to keep in mind if they're just about nutrition, or it doesn't have to be three, but that's a nice cute number.
Three is so cute.
Three is so cute. What are some important things that you wish people would know?
Our body has innate intelligence. I think learning that was really powerful for me. That even if you have been sick and you've healed your body through food, that you don't have to be kept in prison by the rules. You could do a potluck potentially. And I mean, the thing in school is also we learned that like we were never given any protocols, which was really hard. We never learned the three cute things. You know, it was, hey, guess what? Everyone's a bio-individual.
Oh, sure.
And it was just drilled into us. So it's like, no, you can't just throw supplements at people. Mm-hmm. Like you need to test them on their body. And so I learned neurolingual testing, which was another thing to my, another layer that helped my intuitive eating, which is essentially where we could put a supplement on your tongue and test an incredible amount of, we essentially test your body's response to it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So in the end, right, there's not a one like, oh, follow these steps and you'll get your nutrition or
I know.
Stuff figured
out. Sorry,
right?
Guys. It's probably a long path.
Yeah.
And it's a lifestyle. Veggies never hurt. Actually, right. No, sometimes they do. Sorry. Sorry. Take that back. I can't say anything cute.
Right.
It's hard. So it's funny. Ugly. It's full of shame. And hopefully there will be some breakthroughs with nutrition. One day, after I have this baby, I'm currently 8 months pregnant, folks. After I have this baby and it grows up a little bit, I would love to start working with the community in this way. That's definitely a goal a layer of hum permaculture.
Great. I've really enjoyed working with you. It's been really great. So, Selena, thank you so much for being here. You have been an amazing first guest, and I really appreciate it, and all the hoops that you as a mama have to jump through to set aside some time to talk. So, thanks for telling us about your hum permaculture, which you can find on Instagram. You're at the farmer's market on Saturdays through October, I believe, is the farmer's market.
Well, I'm really trying to convince Jacob that after the baby comes that he cannot leave me.
Oh, there you go. You're going to take a maternity leave. I love it. All right. Well, you've been listening to Conversations on WDRT. My name is Michelle Thomas. My guest has been Selena Dykstra. Thanks for listening. All right, now you all have been introduced to Selena, and you know a bit about her. I'm definitely looking forward to our follow-up. One of the things I'm mostly looking forward to is Selena read the whole Harry Potter series in maybe a month. Maybe it's only a couple of weeks, but anyway, during her postpartum time, and she had never read it before. And I don't usually get to geek out over all the feels I have about the Harry Potter series and having read it to my children and what I think about it as an adult. So that's a little Easter egg that's something that we're going to talk about. Anyway, please look forward to that next week. In the meantime, I will leave you all with Elise Nicole, and I hope you get to enjoy this lovely spring week. Bye, everybody.
Together.